Some people call Perseverance Theater of Juneau one of the best-kept secrets in the state. It is Alaska's only full-fledged professional theater, a regional theater company that is winning a national and international reputation for its offerings. In recent years, Perseverance has won acclaim for such works as Yupik Antigone and Coyote Builds North America. Its artistic director and founder is Molly Smith. Smith is fondly called the driving force, the light and the inspiration, the ambition and the core of Perseverance. I'm Susan McInnes. Today on Conversations, a look at theater in America and in Alaska, at regional theater, what it is and what it does, and at bringing to the stage a sense of purpose and place with Molly Smith. I read recently in a Fairbanks review by Leroy Perkins the following comment. It's about myth. Perkins says, one of the functions of myth is to explain why things are the way they are, why there are waters, why the seasons, why the stars. At another level, he continues, myths tell us, however obliquely, why we are the way we are. If we take Leroy's thought at a non-literal level, does theater play a role? And if it does, what role does theater play in interpreting for us, defining and explaining the why and the what?
Absolutely, it does. I think that that's what theater does at its best and most potent level, is hits us at a mythological or archetypal level. I think that theater, for me anyway, is one of our most civilizing events, because it's a place where people go to listen to someone else for 2 hours and hear what they have to say to us. And I think when theater works at the level of myth, it works at our most unconscious, subconscious level. I think the best thing somebody can say to me as a director is not so much, gee, this production hit me, but someone who will say 2 years later, you know, in the middle of the night when I was having an argument with my wife, I started arguing about this and this and this, and I suddenly realized that it had something to do with a play that I'd seen 3 years before. And I think that's when we have our most profound contact with an audience. And I think it is when we're dealing in myth, because it's something which all of us share. It's something that is very much in our roots, something very much in our persons, and yet it's something we consistently deny in everyday life. And it's within theater where we can actually bring that out and be unafraid to show it.
Then the related question is absolutely true. If Western theater emerges from what we call the sacred festivals, then theater is a sacred or a transcendent event.
Sacred and profane. Huh. I would put both.
And explain.
I think that within theater, what is most important to me is opposition. It's the dynamic of it. So if one has a sacred, one must have the profane as well. It always deals in those clashes between the two. That's how we really understand. We understand through being shocked and being comforted, being compelled and being repelled. A friend of mine once said to a question by a young artist who was saying, what should I paint about? And he said, write down a list. And on the list, in one, write down what compels you, what fascinates you. And in the next category, write down what you like. The next one, write what you dislike. And the next, write what repels you, what is obscene to you. And my friend wrote down diligently all the different things. And then the man said to him, all right, now knock out everything that you say you like and dislike, only paint what fascinates you and what repels you. And I think that's really the dynamic of any art form, is being able to do that. And in theater, we can really do it.
It's asking us then to get to our soul.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's asking us to get to our darkest and lightest side as well. It's asking us to explore areas that people don't often want to explore, that they pull away from.
Which is what I was thinking. In this culture, we tend to emphasize the medium. We do not show on the streets, so to speak, the depths of our soul or the ascendancy, the transcendence of our soul. And in fact, those people who do are considered mad.
Yes.
So we go to a place to explore what we cannot explore.
That's right.
In the bedroom, on the street, in the office.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And I think that people give us buildings to do that in. I think that's often why buildings are for artists, why the outside world wants to put artists in buildings to keep them inside.
Safer. This is Molly Smith. She is the artistic director and founder of Juno's Perseverance Theater. I have heard of you in asking other people who is Molly Smith, that what you're trying most to do is to develop a vision of what theater is about in terms of revealing human truths. This also relates to what we've been talking about.
Yes.
Then.
Yes, I think that that's true. And I think what I keep discovering, I'm primarily a director, and there is something to me that's thrilling about being a director because I can be 70 years old and just be getting better and better with it. It has to do with whatever my own life experiences that I spiritually live through then gets lived through the work. I think of myself very much as of an artist that's a vessel. I'm not sure where ideas come from. I can't claim that they're all things that come out of me. I often think that they come through me, that I can act as a conduit for ideas, you know, things that I pick up or that I discover, that my talent is really as a synthesizer. And I think from that point of view, what's amazing about working in an art form like theater as a director is you get better as you get older because you live more. If you actually face what's happening to you, if you actually face the changes that you are coming face to face with, then you can face it with actors. You can face it with an audience. And the more courage one has in being able to do that, the more courage one can pass into an audience. Audiences may not always like it. I mean, I think sometimes my work tends to be too confrontational for people or tends to be too off-kilter or other times people like my work very much. I've gotten to the point where it actually doesn't matter anymore. What's important is the work. What's important is the message. What's important is the entertainment, whatever it is that we're going for in a particular project. And that's freeing. I'm 39 years old, and that's freeing. And I think, my God, does this mean that it'll just get better?
What's too confrontational? From your perspective, have others thought is too confrontational in Perseverance's presentation?
Oh, I think sometimes people think that some of our new work may be too confrontational. 2 years ago, we did a project called The Obscene Bird of Night, which is by a Chilean writer named José Donoso. And it is a play that really crosses time and space. It's about the conscious, the subconscious, the unconscious, its dreamscape. It covers 400 years in the life of three different families. It goes into a madhouse. It really is about a man's psychological soul and the unpeeling of that soul. And for some of our audience, totally turned off by it. It was a new translation by Dara Cloud that we did, and she was there with us as we worked on the piece. It was thrilling for us. I eventually directed it at Trinity Rep in Providence, Rhode Island, and it went very well there. But it's that type of work that gets under people's skin because it's something that's different. It then becomes confrontational. And if anything, I think what Perseverance Theater has done is we've always differentiated. We're always moving in different directions. I call it pushing the outside of the envelope. I think sometimes audiences long to be comforted. And sometimes we long to give it to them, and other times we don't. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean by confrontational. John Adams's piece, when we first produced Coyote Bill's North America, there were many people, not just in Juneau, but around the state, who found it quite confrontational and had great arguments about it. And for me, that's the best. That's the best. Have people talk about it, discuss it, get it out, whatever it is. If it is compelling enough to them where they're repelled by it, what's that really saying? It's saying that it has some kind of immediacy for them. Much better that they would talk about it and be upset about it than that they wouldn't come.
We live in the time of MTV and Die Hard 4 and what an acquaintance of mine called recently the acoustic narcotics. There's radio and television and videotapes all around us telling us essentially, eat your pablum, honey. It's all right. Everything's fine. Don't worry about it. Don't think about it. Mm-hmm. Does this elevate the role and responsibility of theater? And does it challenge theater? Because the audiences who may be coming to you have come fresh from a sappy love story or Terminator 2 where things are spoon-fed. Mm-hmm. Where the theater in 1991, given the other competitive forces?
I don't know. I swing back and forth on it. Sometimes I think, oh my God, does this just mean that we're a dying breed, you know, that we're more and more isolated from the mainstream? There's other times when I just eat up popular culture. I think to be in the theaters, to be a part of the world, and I need to understand the sappy love stories. I need to understand the MTVs. I need to look at that. I need to be a part of the world. I need to understand fashion. I need to put it on the stage. So there's a couple different parts of me that war inside. And I think that theater at its best is a popular art form, and we want people to come and see it. So it's finding a way to be able to utilize what's happening in the world, to be able to use mass communications within a theater setting. Because theater really is about language. If I needed to sit down and say, what is it about, I would always say that I would go back to language. Although I'm quite visual as a director, I still always begin there. I'm an interpretive artist. I'm not a seminal artist like a playwright is. And so my need really is to reflect off of something, to bump up against something. And I think that bumping up against something means that I need to know what's going on in the world, and I need to relish it because it's my world. This is my time. These are our times. And so to know and understand what's happening on MTV or Die Hard 2, I'll go to see them, to use them.
And both forms emerge out of the same goo, the same chaos, the same...
human nature.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Human nature, human need. There's a need for that type of material. There's a need for people to see it. You can't deny its popular excitement among people. So it's finding some way to dive into that and understand it and bring it back to the theater. I think we long for it. We hunger for it. I don't know why. It's fascinating to me. Really fascinating.
You're listening to Conversations on KUAC-FM. I'm your host, Susan McInnes. With us today is the artistic director and founder of Perseverance Theater in Juneau, Molly Smith. Perseverance Theater was founded by a core group of five people, all of whom see Smith as the inspiration and the foundation for this theater. Molly has directed over 40 productions. There have been over 60 main stage productions since the founding in 1979 of Perseverance Theater, over 80 Alaskan, national, and international tours. We're talking today with Molly Smith. Explain the term regional theater. I've gotten a couple of responses when I've asked the question. One was, well, it's anything but Broadway, of course. And the other is that, well, Broadway is also regional theater in some ways. Regional theater in its parts is what to you?
To me, it's of and pertaining to a place, a sensibility. And so a regional theater in Alaska, for me, is a theater that would grow out of the roots of this place. And fortunately, because Alaska is so eclectic and so diverse, there are many, many different directions that a theater can go. and can grow. One of the largest things that we've done has to do with Alaskan writers. We've produced a ton. And we also work with Alaskan designers. We also work with visual artists from Alaska. We work with actors from the States. So we're very much out of the roots of the community and the place that we live in. And it's part of what we keep wanting to push for and strive for is a particularly Alaskan form of theater. Whatever that means. I'm not sure what it means because we're such a diverse lot. Mm-hmm. We're multi-talented. People that come and work at the theater, if we were down south, probably someone would just come in as an actor. Although at Perseverance, the way that we really were founded and the way that we move is out of the context of living in Alaska today, and that is, all right, so fine, you're an actor, but what else do you do? Oh, you're also an administrator. Good. You're a teacher, too. Good. All right, that's good. And you're a boat builder. Great. That might mean that eventually you might be a designer. And so the people that come to work with us at the theater are artists that are holistic. We're really interested in that. People who can see out of both eyes and can see in a circumference rather than people who see narrowly. I think that it makes our productions more relevant because of that. We have more of an ability to see all the way around. We don't get into infighting or the actors arguing and then the designers arguing and then that, because how can a designer argue when he's also an actor? He has to see it from both sides. So that to me has to do with of and pertaining to a region. It comes out of the people. It comes out of who we are. We do a lot of cross-cultural work too. So we audition in different parts of the state, bring in performers from all over the state. We have a particular interest in storytelling. That's the type of projects that we often bring into the school. And actually, for the next 3 years, that'll be much more of our focus in our educational programs. We probably go into, gosh, what was it? We did like 50 workshops this year. So we have a number of people within the company that teach and are good teachers and good storytellers.
You have, at Perseverance, put at least part of your emphasis on the native cultures of Alaska. Mm-hmm. Yupik Antigone took a classic Greek play and gave to it an Alaskan flavor, reached back into another sort of heritage. Can you describe the process of doing that? What pulled the chain on the light bulb and said, I want to mix this?
Well, it wasn't me. It was, and that's often what happens. People come to me or they come to the theater with possible projects. That's how Coyote Bill's North America came about. John Adams sent me a bunch of his music and said, listen, I'm interested in collaborating on a project. Here is the text from Barry Lopez's stories of Coyote Bill's North America. I want to write music for it. And once I heard his music, I got off on it. I liked it a lot. I dragged a bunch of people in the theater to hear it. They were all going, sounds kind of interesting to us. You know, they were back and forth on it. Some people really loved it, and it just all felt right. And so then we began to collaborate. On something like Yupik Antigone, Dave Hunsaker, who people may know as, he's a remarkable theater artist. He really is. And now film. He's doing a lot of script writing for film now. He came after he had acted with me when I was directing Mother Courage and Her Children. And he came to me maybe a couple months later and said, I have this idea. I also knew him as a writer because he'd given me some of his scripts, which I liked very much. And he said, you know what I'd really like to do? I would like to marry the Antigone script with the Yupik culture. I said, I said, why, Dave? And he said, because I believe that they're both ancient cultures. He believed that they saw a number of the elements within Antigone, which had to do with family, which had to do with burial of the dead, which had to do with love for elders, that they really carried that very fully in both of the cultures, their love for the sea. So it sounded really interesting. And I said, yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Let's raise the money and let's do it. So it just started from a little idea like that. And then he would come in and say, I think the way that we really need to proceed on this is that I need to go into a village. I need to be in a traditional village. And the way that I could do that is I could go out and travel and sit down and talk to village elders. So that's what he did. And then eventually a script came out of that. Dave is a poet of the theater, and it was quite poetic, and really from the point of view of subsistence hunters and fishermen as well, the man in the kayak. And he then went into the village. I visited while he was working on it, and midway through the project, it really felt as if the piece should be in Yupik instead of in English. It started out being in English with all native performers, and then it was, of course, that's what it should be. And when the project finally began to move around the state, it had an unbelievably strong response. I think it was as if people were seeing a piece of the moon. They were seeing a culture that they hadn't understood before. There was Yupik dancing and singing in it. It was in rarefied form in terms of the theater. It was an elegant production. It was a really stark, simple production, and very selective. The design work on it was beautiful. It was sharp. It was clear. All of the sewing was done in the village, so that the cuspucks that people wore and the skin sewing was really beautiful. The beadwork that people had on was gorgeous. And there were two huge tusks, which were storytelling tusks, in the middle of the space that were all painted by an artist up in the Tuksuk Bay area, which is where the whole project was put on.
Tusks and, belonging to whom originally? Tusks?
Yupik tusks. They were made out of framework, steel framework, and then stretched with canvas.
Thank you.
And when people saw the production, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about how theater is a civilizing event. What I think it did for people is suddenly listening to Yupik for a two-hour period of time versus only maybe hearing it on the street when somebody says, I want a cup of coffee in Yupik, and having it married to what everyone believes is somehow our past, which is the past of the Greeks, was thrilling for people in terms of understanding something, you know, putting the two together, I think caused a lot of pride among people, a lot of Native people who then became interested in theater. I think it caused a different, almost quirk in the system for whites that had viewed Native culture maybe as something to be seen in books and not necessarily something on the stage. It was a piece of the moon. And that project then went on. It performed in New York. It performed in Greece. It performed in France. Always to great acclaim because of that. And it was not a museum piece. It was a living, strongly stated piece. The performers were very good. And I think... It was one of those pieces that helped launch the theater into another area. The very first project we did, which is really interesting, is called Pure Gold. And I interviewed 35 old-timers to find out, what was Alaska like? And they were all pioneers of the area. They were people who had lived in Alaska for 60, 70, 80 years. So they went back to bear stories. They went back to stories about the mines. They went back to Tlingit stories. They went back to how the world began. They went back to Filipino stories of Filipinos working in the mines. And then eventually I cast the six best storytellers from out of that crew of 35, which was like our first cross-cultural piece. And then it got put together into a reader's theater piece by Susie Gregg Fowler, and eventually it played 200 times. Because for people, again, it was something that was beyond the experience of the theater, like Yupik Antigone was. It took it out of the context of the theater and kicked it into people's own lives. With Pure Gold, people were seeing things. They were seeing, it was as if they were hearing their grandparents speak. Everybody comes up to Alaska with this feeling that there are these pioneers here, but you rarely get to see them. And suddenly here were six on stage talking to you about their lives, talking to you about why it's important to struggle in Alaska, talking to you about how to live in Alaska, you got to be tough. Mm. And everyone cheering at that, and also cheering because of a knowledge of a longevity of those people. sitting up there in the audience. So for me, that's when theater is at its most vibrating. Yes, yes, this is right, is when it kicks it into people's lives.
This is Molly Smith. You're listening to her on Conversations. Molly Smith was educated three different schools, at the University of Alaska for a year, then at Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and took her master's from American University, also in Washington, all in theater. Is this one of the responsibilities of regional theater, where it takes an aspect of culture in its broadest sense and reflects it out not only to the region but to the world, to say, find the universals, find yourself?
For me, it is. I don't believe that that's true for everyone. I think for some people in regional theaters, they would find me speaking in a foreign language right now.
How so? Why would they say that? And or how would they define region that would find you foreign?
I think for them, region just meant that they happened to live in another part of the country.
Phoenix.
Right. That it really didn't have anything to do with a sense of place. And for us, a sense of place has a lot to do with what we produce. It doesn't have to do with each and every production, but it has to do with at least a few a year, because we grow out of that. We grow out of the community. We aren't separate from it. We are a part of it. And what happens in the community, we respond to.
What does Perseverance see as its community these days? When you began, Alaska Rep was considered the statewide theater, was still alive. It died, many think, tragically, while Perseverance was growing. Perseverance is now in position to become the state theater for Alaska. Do you see yourself as Southeast, Alaskan, Northwest, Pacific Rim? What's the region that Perseverance reflects or aspires to?
I think we definitely reflect Alaska. I don't know if I would ever venture to say we are the state's theater, because I think the state's too big. I would hope that there are many theaters that can be the state's theater. We're definitely interested in doing work that takes us all over the state, but the state's too big. It's huge.
To represent, to be.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Or to set oneself into that. And I also think that we're very interested in the world. Two of our other areas of interest have to do with Canadian and Latin American plays. And we produce them. We produce this next year, we'll be producing three Canadian writers. Why? Because of shared borders, because of shared interest with Latin America, because, frankly, we better keep moving in terms of that language base, because by the year, what is it, by the year 2000, over half of the people in the United States will speak Spanish as a first language. And so in order to move into that, we need to understand and bring the Latins to the stage. And so really, if you were to look at the theater, I'd probably say we've got three major areas of interest. One is Alaskan work or new work. One is Canadian. One is Latin American. We also do, you know, American plays, and we do classic plays, although our classic plays are always done with a twist. We're not interested in productions that would be going back to the idea of a museum production, you know, where it's played as exactly as it's set out. That doesn't make any sense to us, because we're of the moment. We want to be very much of the time.
You don't do Oklahoma as it was staged in 1962.
Yes, right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Some people are really interested in that, and that can be great theater, but it isn't an area of our interest.
I've also heard of regional theater that it is the place from where directors, producers, writers, actors can, and thus audiences, can take risks. In New York, it's just too bloody expensive to take a risk if tickets are $60 a shot and staging is massively expensive. Is it part of the play, the fun, to take risks, and is it also the responsibility?
I think it is. I think it is a part of the responsibility. I think if one doesn't risk, it doesn't make a lot of sense to be in theater. It doesn't make a lot of sense to be in any art form, frankly. because one is always pushing for new forms. One is always pushing for new ideas. One is, I think that's the role of the artist, isn't it? Is to push past boundaries. It's to kick out the slats. If we thought of ourselves as thoroughbred horses, we'd always be trying to find where our outer edges are so that we could knock down the corral or knock down the fence and move on.
What does it mean then to, in that context, to cast a traditional male role with a woman, or to cast white, so to speak, roles with minority actors? What are you doing? What are you saying to the audience?
I think we're saying to the audience that this is a human being. I don't think that we're saying that one of the, when we produced, there's a couple interesting stories. When we did The Tempest, the role of Prospero was played by a woman. And the dynamics within that were fabulous, fabulous. It kind of turned people around in terms of looking at the role of Prospero, because normally it's seen as patriarchal, and seeing it as a part of the mother was fascinating for people, I think.
And you're asking the audience to look at what?
Give me a short list. Human nature. Instead of looking at, this is a male role, this is a female role, this should be done by a white actor, this should be done by a black actor. It's like, throw that stuff out. Mm-hmm. We do colorblind casting, and we do cross-gender casting all the time. Unfortunately, many of our greatest writers in the theater have written many, many roles for males than for females, and it's sad. And so shifting the balance of that, we do quite often. And I also think, it's a better reflection of life now. I think cross-cultural casting is a better reflection of life as well. And I think in seeing that on stage, it causes people to have to rethink.
Including your actors, directors, scene designers.
Absolutely. Everybody has to keep rethinking the world that we're living in now, instead of trying to compartmentalize. It's the same thing. You're exactly right. It's getting rid of whatever the boundaries of that particular role are. Stretch it out. Open it up.
What else in this culture is doing what theater is doing, from your perspective, in that context? Where's the envelope being pushed?
Boy. I'm sure it's happening other places. Where is it happening? Is it happening? It's happening in different ways at different places. Is it happening in corporations? Is it happening? I don't know.
New management styles in corporations?
New management styles, I think so. I think for many years people were really loved the corporate style of management, which is strictly hierarchical. And I think now people are much more interested in circular management, or they're more interested in much more of a flat style of management, where it isn't the whole pyramid style. I think we have to shift. I mean, I really feel that. And so maybe I read that into different corporations when it's not really happening, but I think it is more. I think people are talking to each other more now than they were even 10 years ago. I think we're being forced to talk to each other more. And the more we need to talk to each other, the more people are going to be interested in coming to the theater, because they'll come for information. They'll come if the actors have courage. That's the kind of odd thing that's happened since all of the censorship issues have been coming out, is I think that there is a possibility, because there's more repression in the theater, or more repression that people may feel, that it's possible for the work to get better.
The challenge from the National Endowment for the Arts, when the National Endowment for the Arts says, no, stay inside this small square box, the challenge is to push the sides of the box open.
That's exactly right.
What's your reaction to all of that?
Oh, I think it's frightening, and I think it's wonderful, because it has pushed the arts back into the forefront where I believe the arts belong. So regardless of how people feel about it, the arts are now on the front pages of the newspapers, and I say that's good. I say it's good to make waves. I think it's good for people to be arguing about art. I thought it was good years ago when Nimbus came out in Juno and people were arguing about public
the sculpture
art.
That nobody liked
exactly,
for some reason.
That people didn't like or that a few people liked.
Right.
I would have liked it better if it had a stronger response on its opposite end of people saying, I love it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there wasn't as much on that end. But I think that theater is a place where people should be able to debate. They should be able to agree, disagree, agree to disagree. You know, it is very much a public forum.
And we can take that argument onto the front pages of newspapers, into Congress, into the churches, into the schools.
That's right. And then art then has an immediacy that I don't think that it's had for probably 25 years, at least within the theater. That was the last heyday of the theater was really 20 or 25 years ago. And that was in the time period when Gratowski, the great Polish master, was here, when a lot of work that was being done in New York was very experimental. And for about a 10-year time period, the work was very, very exciting. And since that time, it's been a little dry. I think it's been a little dry, and it's starting to get juicy again because people are starting to fight. They're fighting more. And art forms, I think, need to be about fight. They need to be about struggle rather than comfort. Comfort is a couch. You know, it's some place to lay back on. And art, I don't believe, should be about that.
The worst thing that can happen is everybody says, oh, it's fine, it's nice. Yeah.
It's nice.
It's
ooh,
right. Nice.
Ooh, that's a scary term.
Yeah.
Much rather have people say, I hated it. Great. Why?
Come back next week.
<That's>
Wait
right.
And see what we're doing then.
That's right. Maybe you'll love it.
Perseverance Theater was founded in 1979. In 1989, Perseverance founded the Alaska Conservatory. This is an organization within an organization that calls on multi-talented, multicultural artists from Alaska and puts them into work as full-time seasonal performers within the acting company of Perseverance or as artists in training through the internship program. We're talking with Molly Smith. I'm Susan McGinnis. You're listening to Conversations. You have been defined as a director, as someone who is facilitative and incredibly demanding, who is motivating, and yet, if I can translate for some of the people I've talked to, spoken with, who works with an open hand. Do you have a theory of management? We were talking about management a little bit ago. And if so, what is that?
I do. You know, it's interesting to me. I'm teaching here in Fairbanks for the Fairbanks Festival under Joe Scott, and it's fascinating because I'm teaching a directing class, and I haven't taught a directing class in several years. Something that I realize in terms of directing is that there's a male form of directing and there's a female form of directing.
Translate.
I knew you'd like that. I think that the male form of directing is coming up with a very clear idea, a clear conceptual idea, a clear idea of what the production will be and needs to be, casting the show, and then moving everything to that sharply chiseled idea. I think female, and again this is a broad statement that I think a lot of people probably argue with me about, is coming up with a clear idea, knowing what you want, then getting into the project and seeing what one's tools are, what the energies are, and shifting it. So that by the end of it, it is a synthesis or a combination of what everyone is, rather than one single person's vision. And I would say that that is my style as a director, that's my style as an artistic director, and that's my style as a manager. When we were talking earlier about that flat form of hierarchy, that's very much what we have at Perseverance Theater. I think beginnings are very important, and the beginning of the theater started around the round table in my living room, the five of us around that round table. And that was from my grandmother's grandmother. Big wooden oak, beautiful furniture. And that's where we had all of our meetings for probably the first 3 or 4 years of the theater's existence. So there wasn't a head of the table. Mm. There was a circle around the table. Everybody threw in everything onto the table. That's what we'd always say. Get it on the table. Problem solve it. Throw it on the table. What's it about? And I think that that spirit really is maintained in the theater to this day. A sort of, we can do it, we can go for it. Very Alaskan energy that way as well. And I think that's what I do directorially as well. I'll come in with a clear idea. It almost always shifts. Almost always shifts. And I'm happy that it does, because for me, it goes back to theater being this living, breathing art form that needs to work with whatever the energies of the particular people are, rather than just my energy, my thought, my idea. What's that? What kind of ego is there, if that's where it always is? So much better, actually, it's bigger ego, to think we can use all these people's ideas and all these people's thoughts.
This dismisses the criticism of the feminine, of the receptive mind, that essentially says that the feminine is a recessive gene, that, oh, it has good ideas, but it's just so open that it never has any direction. You're saying, I direct. This is not a problem. I know who the director is. However, I direct a crew, all of whom have minds.
That's exactly right. And I select. I think the major role of the director is to select. The major role of the director is to question. I don't go into a project with the answer. I go in with a lot of questions. And that's a process I'll use a lot directorially with actors, questioning them, designers, questioning them, and then take in that information and then eventually select. Select the best ideas, select the best thoughts. And that has to do with taste. It has to do with everything that I am as an artist. Which way I go. And sometimes I make selections late in the process, very late in the process, because I like that sloshing around. I like that being in the mire. I like that being in the fog. I like not quite knowing where or what it is. I like that. Because I often find that the best work comes out of that, of not being set. For me, being set at the beginning is being dead at the beginning. Because the beginning is a start, it should be a time when there's lots of raw material, when there are a lot of different input that comes in, and the middle is developing whatever those best things are. And toward the end, it's, well, different people have teased me during technical rehearsal because my mouth is running so fast at that point. It's yes, no, yes, no, do this, no, no, yes, 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 you there, yes, yes, faster, slower. You know, it's when I get into all the cliches of directing, because most people think directing is about saying fast and slow on stage, which is like, whoa. It's like saying to an actor, how did you learn all those lines? Which is not what acting is about. But it is at that point in the last week and a half of rehearsal when I'll make all the selections. And usually people are happy because everybody has been able to run out all their ideas. They didn't feel stomped early on. They didn't feel repressed early on. Everything came out of the top of people's heads.
Are there people in companies past or present who find that utterly horrifying?
Absolutely. Most people. Absolutely.
God, just tell me what to do.
Absolutely. Just tell me what to do. Please, please don't question me anymore. You just tell me what you want. No, I don't want to go back into this scene and try it another way. I want you to tell me to cross downright and sit in the chair.
Cry and then laugh.
Cry and then laugh. And there are brilliant actors who do that beautifully. And they are incredible technical actors. And I've worked with a number of those actors before. And have been able to garner wonderful performances from them as well, although oftentimes they're not happy during the process with me.
I'll never go back to Juno.
I'll never go back. I'll never work with that woman again. She drives me nuts. But for other people, it opens them up creatively. It makes people feel that they are creative beings instead of pawns.
Pawns.
Pawns, like pawns on a chessboard.
Oh, pawns.
Pawns. I think a lot of people think directors...
Move me here, move me
here. Like a chessboard.
Yeah.
Very much like a chessboard, which is too cold for me. I'm hotter than that. I like the work hotter. I like it more intense.
Molly Smith on Conversations. Molly, I was told recently by someone I queried that the United States needs... not necessarily more than anything else, but needs in a major way a national theater. that there is no apex towards which to strive. Is that true in your mind? Does it matter that we don't have, as the British do, a national theater? Or does it matter terribly that we don't have one?
I think we have a national theater. I think the regional theaters are the national theater. I don't think that we in the United States do it the way the English do or the Canadians do. I think that our national theater is a combination of all the regional theaters, the 350 regional theaters, which are now across the country, because of the remarkable diversity and changeability within those companies. I think we already have it.
And so this country sources what it thinks of as theater within the regions of this country, and that tells me that our national theater reflects all the different ways that we are.
That's right. It's,
people say of Los Angeles, for example, that LA is a city in search of a city. America is a country in search of itself.
Yes.
And has to do it in differentiated means, not by singular means.
That's right.
Interesting.
I think that that's true.
Where do you think the place of community and university theater, for example, is? If regional theater is the national theater, where are the other two forms, and maybe alternative theater, too, experimental theater?
Maybe alternative theater, maybe theater street theater, maybe theater in the bars. Boy, I think everybody's got a role. To me, a sign of the greatest health of theater is when you have all of those operating at once. When there is a strong community theater, when there's strong university theater, when there's strong professional theater, when there are people who are pitching in the parks, when there are people doing productions in the street. The best theater that I saw in Latin America was in Santiago because it had theater operating at all those different levels. And the kids that were performing Romeo and Juliet in the barrio were upset, but pleasantly upset, because some of the ideas that they had come up with, physical ideas within their Romeo and Juliet, had been stolen by the large professional theater that came out to see their work.
Watching them in the barrio.
Watching them, exactly, exactly. So that's why I say it is the strongest when all of those different levels are happening at the same time. Because you can see better theater at the university than you can sometimes in the professional theater. You can see better theater sometimes in the bars than you can at the university theater. You know, I don't have a feeling of, oh, this is the best because it's seen in this context or it's at this level. I think good theater is good theater. And as long as a theater has a vision, that to me is its most important asset. It has a vision and it does good work. And then everything else will follow. And standards of quality and that's what will really draw people to a theater. That's what will draw actors to it. It's what will draw audiences to it.
And the graffiti artists and the break dancers and the street corner rap artists all inform the national theater, so to speak.
That's
the national
exactly
music,
right.
The national scene.
Yes, yes. Right. And people's attitude and behavior and what happens in the corporate rooms and what happens in radio stations and what, yes. Yes. That's the best part about theater, is that everything that happens in life can be used on stage, as long as you go out and look at it.
What are your thoughts about funding in an ungiving age? This country sees itself as being fairly uncharitable at this point. We may not like it, but we both see ourselves and are defined by ourselves as fairly ungiving. Is it a cat fight, a dog fight to get the money to keep Perseverance alive? And how do you do it, if that's so?
We receive state funding. We receive national funding. We receive funding from the community. We receive individual funding for years. We just keep shifting into different possible areas of funding, trying to find different pockets to be able to do the work. And I think it's always difficult. Funding is always difficult. It makes me sad to go to places like Germany and Berlin and see how incredible the state subsidy is for artists. You know, it's the artists in Europe are really seen as people to look to and to talk to, you know, that they're very much a part of the culture and people love their artists there. I don't think artists in the United States are loved. I think mostly we're pushed off to the side. I think mostly we're thought of as an extra or as a frill, you know, all those cliches that people talk about. And I find that really sad. I think it means that some of our best work doesn't get done because there's that attitude. There's an attitude of not seeing us as an integral part of what's happening in the country. And we are. And probably what will need to happen is we just have to keep pushing that we are. I see theater as central. And so, therefore, in my worldview, it is. And I think the more that we are able to see that, the more people will want to support it, either through funds or coming to productions or whatever.
What are the most generous sources? And what should
for
be?
Us, yeah. For us, the most generous sources are the National Endowment for the Arts. We receive money from the Mellon Foundation, from the Ford Foundation, from Rockefeller, from the Reader's Digest Fund, from the state of Alaska. One of our programs for the conservatory is funded under jobs for artists. From the Alaska State Council on the Arts. It's very generous as the State Council can be in terms of tight funding. We receive funding from the City of Juneau. We receive funding from different oil companies here in the state. We don't have corporations in the way that a lot of states have corporations. Since the state is young, what we really have are oil companies. You know, if you were to talk to our friends in Milwaukee, they'd have hundreds of different possible options of companies and organizations and family operations that have been around for 100, 200 years, you know, or 150 years, that really have corporate giving formulas. And but it just has to do with that area of the country. It doesn't have to do with, oh, we'll also give money to Alaska. So I think that makes it difficult. We have to go outside more for our funding than maybe people do in other states.
And that, at this point, is just an unavoidable product and function of the age of
That's
the
right.
state of Alaska.
That's right.
What are your ambitions for Perseverance? What do you lay in bed and think about? What I really want to do is...
What I really want to do is... I guess... What I really want to do is exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm so in the middle of it right now, I'm not going in the future at this moment. I'm in the season. I'm very excited about the productions. I'll be directing a lot this year. That's what I'm thinking about right now. I want to build the company into a strong company. I want to really define a uniquely Alaskan form of performing. I don't know what that will be. I have a feeling it'll be physical, muscular, off the wall. That's the sense I have.
What does that mean, physical and muscular?
That the style is quite physical. Different companies are known for whatever their work is. Like Stanislavski's company in Russia was really known because of all of the internal work that the actors did. I think in Alaska, we're very external. We're a physical people. So that's really what's coming out a lot in the work.
So we mine and fish and...
Exactly. Exactly.
Chop exactly. down trees. Or,
that's right.
Suspenders and belts and
mm-hmm.
Levi's and boots.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's another question. How do you see your state? Give me a persona. We've done suspenders and belts and boots and...
Boy, rifles. I would say I see the state as there are 55 languages spoken in this state. It's a state that covers a fifth of the United States. It has only 500,000 people living in it. It contains in it, you know, white people and people out to get rich and people running away from something and Aleuts and Yupiks and Inupiats and, you know, it's blacks. It has everything in it. The state is amazing. It's got Russians, all the change happening now with people making all the voyages to Russia. It's an incredible state. It's endlessly fascinating to me. And because of the fishermen, because of the loggers, because of the people that are coming in who are gold miners, all that shift that's happening now, the military that's up here, the people who are drawn up here because I love the people that are running away from something, of course, because it's all about secrets. Everybody comes up here with a secret. Everybody comes up here with a story to tell when they move up here, a reason for coming. And because of that, we're an aggressive people. We're a little bit pushy. We're also people that don't say no to each other very often. We say yes, yes, I say yes, I say yes. It's like that great Molly Bloom speech in Ulysses. She says yes 47 times when he asks her to make love. I say yes, yes, yes. And that's the thing that I love about Alaska. When I first came back 13 years ago after having been on the East Coast and having lots of people say, no, 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 you're too young, no, you're a woman, no, you're not good enough, no, you're too good, no, 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 to come up here and to say, I want to start a theater, yes, I want to do this, yes, I want to try this, yes, I want to raise money, yes, was just, it was like being a part of a mountain.
Can you pursue your craft here? Until you're 70? Until you consider yourself mature as an artist?
I have been pursuing my craft here. I also sometimes direct outside. I need that. I need outside stimulation. We bring in sometimes designers from outside, occasionally an actor, sometimes directors that I learn from too. I travel. I have to travel. And so those things are important for me because Juneau and Alaska is isolated. That's part of the reason why the work is good. It's also part of what can make the work incestual, which is something that I'm not interested in. I want to be bruised, to go back to an earlier idea. I want to be pushed up against. And the way to do that is always to be working with people that are better than you and to learn from them. So I think I'll keep dividing my time so that there's time every year when I go out to work in other places as well as with Perseverance.
And does the touring within Alaska also take the role of an infusion?
Oh, yes, I think it absolutely can. Yeah, yeah. I think it's more of an infusion. I think it's very exciting for the performers, and I think it's exciting for the communities when we go in, for people to see our work, because we get out into Alaska maybe every 2 years to really tour extensively up in this area, even though we've done a lot of touring around Alaska in recent years, it's been a little bit less.
We've been spending an hour with Molly Smith. She mentioned going outside. She has represented the United States theaters within a group of peers, meeting with directors and writers in South America and in Japan. She has directed at Trinity Theatre in Providence, Rhode Island, and has plans to direct at Tarragon in Toronto this season. Molly Smith, the artistic director and founder of Perseverance Theatre, thank you for an hour on Conversations.
Great. Thanks, Susan.
Molly Smith has been a guest of the Fairbanks Summer Arts Festival, produced by Joe Scott in Fairbanks. I hope you'll join us again next week. I'm Susan McGinnis.